Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. GA got that dope.
You already know.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuces85. Show's brought to you, of course, as always, by RotoCurve. You can see our content, rotocurve.com/college-basketball. We have weekly, monthly, and remainder of the year packages available. Check us out. We're gearing right up. Football season, college football season especially, is over tonight. I know some of you are watching the ending of Clemson-LSU right now. NFL is wrapping up. The very first of the year throwdown tournament is happening on DraftKings tomorrow. Mania has been announced. Hooray, hooray. So lots of exciting things going on. Now is the time to get into college basketball. If you've been messing around with football and all your other sports and you know, waiting for that to end, now is the time. So we're going to be doing much more podcasts and on a daily basis during March and probably on every other day basis here starting the end of this month. So lots of stuff coming up, content, podcasts, betting picks, all kinds of good stuff. I do have two children over with me right now, my daughters, not random children, mind you. So you may hear them in the background. I do apologize in advance. They are 6 and 2. If I knew how to make them be quiet for longer than 30-second stretches, I definitely would. So I apologize in advance if you hear random screaming here or there. It's just kids in the back that belong here. No need to call the police or anything. All right, so I'm very excited. Mania Q number one has been announced. It is in the lobby. I knew it, you know, I kind of felt like it was going to come. Last year, I went back because I saved all the links from last year. And Mania Q number one last season started on January 16th. So I knew if they were going to do it, it was coming up pretty close. Excuse me. I know there's been satellites coming on for the World Championship Fantasy College Basketball. We're not really sure what that even is. You know, it's a $300 buy-in. There's been tickets going on since pretty much the beginning of the year. So, you know, keep collecting those tickets. Mania is the cream of the crop, though. A lot of blowback last year when they did Mania. Just for qualifying, you weren't even guaranteed a payday. You had to make the top 32 just to get paid. Very, very poor way of doing it. Looks like they fixed it this year. It's not a 50-50. It's all bracketed, all 64 people. If you qualify, you get at least $500. And if you win the thing, it looks like you get a huge prize of $50,000. So pretty exciting stuff. Definitely worth chasing. Again, it's a 13-man tomorrow, $250 buy-in. I feel like I need to jump in, so I have gone ahead and entered that 10 of 13 right now if you're considering entering it. Mania Q number one, I just simply can't stay away, so I will be in there hoping to get my first seat right away. Last year in Q number one, I had seat one locked up. I just had to fade 45 points from Kamar Baldwin. I was out of PMR. He had 30 at the half. I still felt okay. Ends up with 46, costing me the seat. That's okay, though. Kamar Baldwin's still around. He's helped us win money, but that did happen. Very bitter memory, but that's okay. I'm going to be joined here by Eric. Looks like he's on the line right now. Guys, Eric, what's up, my man? How you doing?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. You watching the rest of LSU Clemson, it sounds like?
Yeah, I got it on my iPad next to me.
Nice. So, Mania's been announced. What's your feelings on that? You going to be chasing that this year?
I mean, yes, and I mean, I will. I'm not going to right away. I'm not going to jump in the 250 just getting started. I don't know. I'm still trying to get them to let us know more about this CBB championship, the $300 one, just so I know what I have in my tickets for that before I start firing money at the Mania.
Yeah, it's a good idea because, you know, you get those tickets and then you get the Mania seat and you tie up all this money until March. That can be kind of difficult. So I totally understand that. I won't be chasing a bunch of 250s either, but this first one, I had to give it a shot. And I'm assuming they'll start having saddies for these two. They did last year where you could have like a, I don't think it was like a, maybe a 10 man or something like that, where if you won, you got a ticket for $250 to enter. So it makes it a little more reasonable to chase those. Big, you know, the slate wise here, DraftKings has chosen some very slow paced defensive squads, it appears, which is a little disappointing for the first big slate where we might have some football people over. FanDuel does have the LSU Texas A&M game, which is very, you know, exciting for fantasy purposes. And then they have Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, and Missouri, Mississippi State. So those are the three games that aren't on DraftKings. Can I ask you to turn that down a little bit, whatever that is in the background?
Eric? Me? I don't have anything on in the background. All my volume's gone.
Oh, you don't? I hear like a commercial or something. I don't know what that was. All right, never mind. But anyways, let's dive in. If you guys do want to call in, it's 515-602-9782. You guys want to call in and you know, have questions about this, or you want to find out more about the contest, or, you know, construction of lineups, any of that good kind of stuff. Now that we're going to be on the air more, we'd encourage you to call in and be a part of the show. So I do want to dive right in and talk about the first game here. We're going to start with the DraftKings slate like we always do, and then we'll circle around, back around, and we'll talk about the three FanDuel games too. Duke versus Clemson. I think this is probably going to be a game that majority of people kind of gravitate towards. Duke is generally pretty high chalk, if you will, on the slate. I like them less on the road, but there is some interesting pricing here on the Duke guys. You know, Trey Jones is coming off back-to-back 45s, actually. Price has gone up to 8.3. He's still a pretty safe option. You know, obviously he's looking healthy now. He would be the one Duke guy that I would feel most confident rolling out. Vernon Carey's price has dipped down a little bit. You know, he was up around 9K for a while. He's dropped down to 8.3, which makes him more interesting to me. But the minutes are just never there with him. Coach K sits him, you know, for long stretches. Even if they're you know, if they're blowing him out, he does. If they're close, he does. If they're getting, you know, beat. It just seems like there's no way that Vernon Carey could get 30 minutes ever. You know, looking back at his logs, the last time he saw 30-plus minutes was against SF Austin at home, and we know how that result was, despite his 50. So I'm a little concerned about using Vernon Carey. The price drop definitely interests me more. When he was 9K, I wasn't really using him. You know, I've been fading, and other than the game against Miami where he had 41, he hasn't really been hurting me. I most likely won't have too much of him here on the road just because of the minutes and potential for foul trouble, even though Clemson's not a tough matchup. Matthew Hurt is another guy who's been really chalky, but his price coming off a pretty horrible game, which shows that DK's algo might be a little slow like it was last year, 34, 36, 24, and a 12, and now his price is up to 6.2. So no longer an auto play. He was another guy who I'd been kind of fading a little bit here and there, and it was hurting me a little bit, but, you know, at the same time, and that range was so full of other plays, it didn't hurt me as bad. Because he's another guy who is prone to Coach K sitting for long stretches. He did have foul trouble last game, but even in the other games where he ended up doing well, he had stretches where he should have probably even hit bigger fantasy point totals, but he sat for, like, the last 8 minutes of the game inexplicably. So Duke really makes me nervous because Coach K just, he does this randomly. Cassius Stanley at 5'7", you know, under 6K. He's probably one of the safer options if you don't want to pay up for Trey Jones. He's having a 31, 23, and 26 over the last three. Price still under 6K, so I still feel fine about him. And then Jordan Goldwire is somebody who I think on a slate that lacks clear value. I don't know. As we go through, maybe we'll find somebody who's, you know, going to be some crazy 40%. I don't know if the slate has that, though. Goldwire is probably somebody that people will just look at and as they need value, possibly click in. Look at his minutes, even with Trey Jones healthy, and you know, Wendell Moore's out, so maybe that opened up things for them to go small ball or something. But Goldwire's played 26, 37, and 30 minutes over the last three. I figure with Trey Jones' fact that he would kind of die off, which he has production-wise, but the minutes are still there. So I don't actually mind him that much if you need the value. For Clemson, Amir Sims is a guy who always feels priced too high, but he has the capability to put up big scores. You see, against North Carolina, he had 53, helped by OT. He had 28-6, four blocks and three steals. So his peripherals make him pretty safe. The problem is sometimes the guards like Dawes Scott and Mack and Newman, they shoot a ton, and sometimes they don't get him the ball, and he has to really get his points off of peripherals or, you know, putbacks. So 7-7 still feels kind of bad, but even though, you know, the matchup against Duke, you know, when you run the numbers and stuff, it doesn't necessarily look that great, but there's been some big men who have put up big numbers against them. So for this big throwdown tournament going on tomorrow, you're running, you know, multiple entries. You have, you know, a ton of tickets. I think Sims makes a lot of sense to get exposure to, as he probably won't be that that highly owned. Tevin Mack is fine at 6'5". You know, I never really feel myself wanting to pay that price for him. He certainly can get hot. Kern Scott at 4'5 is another potential value guy, and Clyde Trapp at 4K. I personally don't really use Dawes and Newman and Tyson and guys like that. You know, every once in a while they'll pop off with a nice game, but generally they're mostly on my ignore list. I guess I have to decide if I want to use a 4K Clyde Trapp. Maybe he is one of those guys who ends up being, you know, relatively popular because he probably should be priced higher. You know, coming off a 4X game against North Carolina with 28 minutes, he didn't shoot the ball very well, and he had the 16 fantasy points. Price drops $100 for whatever reason. The fact that he has the volume taking the shots, he had 12 shot attempts, shot 16%, which isn't great, but he's definitely getting the volume because the fact that, you know, all the Clemson guards kind of all take turns shooting, and there's just, you know, a lot of volume to go around, and there's not one of them that really steps out among the others. You know, like last year, there was always a lead guard that took over, and it doesn't seem like they have that this year. So I don't mind Trapp. Scott, I think, you know, Trapp would probably be the cash play or main team play, with Scott being more of a tourney play. Duke and Clemson, I think, is going to be popular by more casual players. How are you going to be approaching this one, Eric?
I'm probably going to end up on Trapp, even though I'm not overly excited about it. And I think I'm going to look at the three-point shooting from Duke. Kind of in this game, you get contrasting styles where Duke tries to push teams off of the three-point line. They're giving up, like, let me see, over 61% of the points they allow come from two. Where Clemson's kind of the other way, they give up, you know, almost 38% of the points against them from three. So I kind of looking at the Duke three-point shooters. You know, I like Trey Jones. Probably some Stanley, even though he's not elite or any. I mean, he's shooting it solid. He's just not taking a lot of threes. But I'll probably just get my exposure to, like, Hurt. Maybe a Joey Baker or Jack White tournament share in case they get hot from the wing. But other than that, I think I likely end up just not really playing this game and try to find spots in the other games.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, the Ken Baum projection on it, 72-60 in favor of Duke. They're 84th in tempo, Clemson 275th. I don't personally trust Duke, especially on the road, and I just don't trust rotation by Coach K because he's just puzzling the way he sits people. Do you think that that Goldwire would still be a semi-popular value guy, or if people are trying to do the, you know, the studs and scrubs thing, you'll see him on a lot of lineups?
Yeah, I do. But usually, like, it's one of those spots where where you think that he's going to be popular, it's probably a game where all of a sudden he just doesn't do a lot, and, like, Alex O'Connell plays a ton of minutes or something. And even though Duke's on the road, like, I know the Vegas line has it as an 11-point game. With Clemson coming off such a huge victory at North Carolina, like, it just screams like a huge letdown spot where they just, I don't know, don't show up even at home, is my thinking here.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Next game on the slate here, Louisville versus Pittsburgh. KenPom projection 64-60 for the Bill. They're 292nd in pace. Pittsburgh 332nd. Now, Pitt just had a game a couple of days ago against Miami on a shorter slate, and really felt like they were going to have a nice game, but they, coming off the North Carolina game, they played a really big clunker. They came back towards the end because Miami was equally bad. But Miami was up so fast, so early, and Pitt just looked flat. One of the things I learned there is that you can't use Eric Hamilton. I was already on the fence with him. It was like a three-game slate, so I kind of had him in some lineups and regretted it immediately. Even at 4-4, his minutes are just gone. You know, Terrell Brown, Coach Capel can't seem to decide if he wants to play Brown, he wants to play Hamilton. They're splitting lineups, they're splitting minutes. Both guys are in a no-fly zone. Audis Toney is back. I'm avoiding that situation going forward. I don't care if it was a two-game slate. I'm just not touching those players anymore. And Xavier Johnson is a guy who just seems to be struggling right now. One guy that wasn't, you know, a huge consistent player last year but seems to be getting that way this year is Trey McGowan. He's becoming a really solidified, you know, near cash play at this point, and somebody who I'm pretty confident in using. I don't like him necessarily in this matchup for my main squad against Louisville, but I think where most people are going to start getting turned off by this game or feel, you know, all you got to avoid against Louisville, they're just, you know, untouchable. I think this is a great spot to target for tournaments. So McGowan's and Champagne are both guys who are, have seen a slight decrease in price for whatever reason, and I think make a lot of sense for tournaments. So those two guys I like a lot. For Louisville, you know, obviously Jordan Nora is somebody 8'5". You're paying a premium for him. I think he's fine. He's going to get 30 fantasy points at worst. Do I think he's going to have, you know, the ceiling of 45-50 that you're really going to need on this slate? I don't think so. I just think that Pitt's going to be able to, you know, the game's going to be slow. It's going to be ugly. Probably make a case for a lot of rebounds. You might look at somebody like Dwayne Sutton, Enoch, or Young KD. I think all three of those guys make a lot of sense. I don't know if I find myself paying the 8-5 for Nora. I don't think a lot of people will either, which also makes him a great tournament play because whenever he's low owned, he seems to pop off for that 5 or that 50 or you know, 5X, 6X ceiling. Are you done with Lamar Kimball, Eric? Are we still at this point where we're like, oh, he's going to have it, he's going to have the game, but it seems like he's burning up his chances with the DFS community.
I want to be just because he's absolutely destroyed me the last couple of games. But it almost feels like a spot where I should kind of jump back on him. Because we know the backcourt for Pittsburgh, like, they can turn it over quite a bit. I mean, Xavier Johnson just struggled the last game against Miami with turnovers. And Kimball's actually played better on the road so far this year. I know it's a small sample size, but he's averaging almost 50% more fantasy points per game on the road. So that's something that intrigues me. He's in that spot where I have to decide, you know, him, Goldwire, Trapp. I don't know. I mean, is he somebody that you're going to look at for your main team, or is he just going to be a get a share just because you've been riding him the last couple of games and you don't?
It would be a throwdown. You know, the big. I don't normally do the MME thing, but I am tomorrow because I've got some ticket shares acquired, and so I'm definitely gonna have some shares. But he won't be on my qualifier team, and you know, if I'm playing 150 or the 50 tomorrow, or whatever, I certainly won't have him. I think he could have some additional. He's just so cheap is the problem. But you think he would fall into the value from this, but it's just he doesn't. I don't know, man. He fell off so hard. This isn't like, how can this possibly be the same player that played at St. Joe's last year? This doesn't make sense. He's had games where he attempted 9 shots, he attempted 11 shots, but he's just not rebounding. He gets a few assists here or there. He's not really getting steals or blocks, and he's scoring occasionally. And it's so weird to see him fall off. I had myself talked into in the non-conference that he just wasn't needed. So he's just kind of learning the system, and then during the conference time, they need him to step up and be old Mark Kimball, and he's just not. So, yeah, but I don't want to miss out because that'll be the biggest kill. If I have no exposure and then all of a sudden he drops that 30, 35 that I think he's still capable of, or maybe it just is the case that the competition is so much higher, as we've seen with Justin Pierce and Christian Keeling and some of these other guys that transferred, that they can't handle the upper competition. I'm not sure. So I will have some tournament exposure, definitely, but not a ton. And Xavier Johnson was a little bit cheaper. I think he'd be actually a decent play for this game too. But he's not hitting value at this price. He's dating back to the beginning of December. He had 18, 19, 24, 35, 26, 25, and 11. It's not really, you know, step. I don't know. I don't know what happened to him. He's just going through some struggles right now. And it seems like McGowan has become the the safe option. Is there anybody, you know, on Pittsburgh that, you know, usually with Louisville on the slate, you know, it almost seems like an avoid. But when I look back at logs, usually somebody has a pretty decent 4X plus game against them. Is there anybody that you envision doing that for Pittsburgh? Or is it kind of just, shit, they look so bad against Miami, I don't want to have any clunkers. Maybe there's some other games to target, even though all the games on the slate kind of look ugly. You know, what are you doing with them?
I mean, I don't – so because of the slate, and you pointed out how a lot of the games kind of look ugly, slower paced, not much for totals, I do think we have to look at this game for options. And to be honest, like, I think for Pittsburgh, I'm looking at Champagne, and then GPP-wise, I'll have a McGowan's or Johnson share. I might use Johnson on FanDuel, even though he hit a rough game against Miami and went up 200. He's still 5,700 over there. With Louisville, I don't think I'll use Nwora on DK, but I'll probably use him on FanDuel. I'm probably going to go with Dwayne Sutton and probably Malik Williams are going to be the two guys I use from Louisville. Malik Williams had a pretty strong game against Pittsburgh. Now I realize these two teams have played once already this year.
Yeah,
they played back in early December, where Pittsburgh only put up 46 points in that game. Malik Williams had a double-double, I believe, if I remember correctly. But Sutton's been really strong on the road, which is kind of nice to see because generally a lot of guys struggle more on the road. You know, they're a lot more comfortable at home. But he's actually been better on the road. Plus he's, you know, at this price point has approached 5X in four out of the last five games. The one that he didn't was struggled with Florida State. And, you know, we know that Louisville struggled in that game. And Florida State's a team with a lot of length that they can run a bunch of different guys at them. So I can understand that. So Sutton's probably going to be my favorite Louisville play.
Yeah, I like him too. I haven't really been using him a ton this year, and I'm kind of missing out. And I have to kind of shake last year's image of him as being the guy that could put up, you know, 10 or 40. And he doesn't really seem to have that lower floor anymore. You know, it looks like at worst you're looking at probably 20 fantasy points, and his rebounding rate has been really kind of quite spiked, and he's been very consistent. And he would be somebody that, yeah, at 6'8 on DraftKings, that would be a price where I would think I wouldn't want any, but I definitely would prefer him over Nwora just because I think he could get close to his total. You know, Sutton's rebounding rate right now is 30% combined, which is really nice. So definitely somebody I like. Malik would be so good if he didn't have to split with Enoch. It really is still a 20-20 type of thing where I thought it was a hot hand at first, but it just seems like he's dialed into that, you know, 18 to 20 minutes, and that's what he's going to get. He does so well with it. If he ever saw 30 minutes, he would be like a baby T-Will. He's not quite to the crazy fantasy point per minute level that T-Will is, but if he were to play that type of minutes, he would absolutely crush the price that he's at currently. Let's move on to the next game here. VCU versus Dayton. KenPom has a 75-65 in favor of Dayton. They're 197th in tempo, VCU 101. First thing we want to look at is Obi Toppin. Those of you who don't know, he's had an ankle injury. He did receive treatment yesterday and today. I was reading on Twitter, and it seems like he's reacting good to it, and they're expecting him to play. So I don't think that it's going to be any last-minute thing or that we're going to be unaware or, you know, it's going to trip us up. It is an hour after the initial lock, but again, I don't expect him to miss time or any late-breaking stuff where, oh my God, suddenly Obi Toppin's out. I've got to redo, you know, 50-plus lineups or whatever. So knock on the wood. I really don't expect that, but of course that could happen. Crazier things have happened in college basketball. Because of that and the fact that they're playing, you know, VCU, which is a pretty tough team in their own right, I'm not prioritizing Obi Toppin. I think, I love him. He's a great player. Usually I want shares, and I will have tournament shares. But I think he's going to lose out at that range to maybe somebody like Paul Reed for a main team, just because you're paying such a premium at 8-6. And everybody else on Dayton is starting to really come around. Crutcher, Landers, Mike Sowell recently. Maybe Watson's really, you know, taking that six-man role and ran with it. So there's so many other guys that can contribute for Dayton on a daily basis, and those guards, you know, can all get hot. It really impacts Toppin. He gets a lot of dimes, though. He gets a lot of rebounds, blocks, steals, so he is capable of paying off this price on a nightly basis. But he also, if somebody's hot, like, say, Landers is hitting his shots or Watson's hitting his shots, he'll almost kind of back off and let them continue to roll. Because he can, you know, he's just like Isaiah Stewart. He demands double teams, demands triple teams. And if those guys get hot, you know, he's just going to rack up assists. So I definitely like him for tournaments, but he's not going to be my favorite player, especially with an ankle injury. That could very easily be a situation that gets re-aggravated. I'm not really tricky. So, rest of the guys for Dayton, you know, Crutcher 6'8", Lander 6'6", Chapman 6K. I almost never play him. Mikesell 6K. He looked really good lately. And then Nibby Watson, it was really fun when he was down at like 4'5", 4'6", up to 5'3". Now it's kind of tough to pay that price for him because he is capable of putting up a 14. So all Dayton seems pretty priced correctly. I definitely like Dayton side here. If I was betting this game, I would be on the Dayton side. Fantasy-wise, I just don't know if I'm paying his prices. Santo Silva at 7'6", he's really an amazing rebounder. Anyone who's followed the last year and a half knows that. So that's going to be a fun matchup, him and Toppin battling it out. Marcus Evans has really taken a step back. He's part of the – he's not quite to the Paris Austin level of regression, but he's definitely not looking like himself for whatever reason. One guy to look at is probably Bones Highland. Nickname is not Sean Highland, but call him Bones. He's 4-2. He did start the game against, who was it, GNU. He had 25 minutes in that game, 17 fantasy points. The game after that, he only had 6. Keep an eye on that, though. 4-2 could be a source of a GPP value for you because he ends up starting again. I definitely don't mind him in that spot. Again, another slower-paced, you know, muck-em-up type of game. What are you going to be doing with this one?
I guess kind of looking at Highland first, he went back to coming off the bench the last game. So I don't know if it was some sort of discipline thing for Marcus Evans or what, but Evans returned to the starting lineup and then played 34 minutes. So I'm not really sure what to make of that whole situation. But really, like, I don't know that I can play Toppin tomorrow. A big man dealing with an ankle injury, and he's got to deal with Santo Silva. Like, you know, I guess I don't see where he doesn't play, but if he happens to not play, then that opens up, like, Jordy Chibunga for value-wise as a GPP dart. But I'm probably just looking at, like, Trey Landers and Mikesell. And then I'll probably think about Santo Silva in a GPP build somewhere just because if he, you know, if Toppin's going to not be as explosive, I like the rebounding upside of Santo Silva.
Definitely. All right, next game, Texas Tech versus Kansas State. This definitely didn't need to be on the slate. This could have been swapped out for the LSU game. KenPom has a 62.59 for Texas Tech. 218th in Temple ranking, Kansas State 252nd. I mean, price-wise, you know, Jameis Ramsey, 7.9, you're not – I don't think you're using him here. I'm not. Chris Clark at 7.5 is – you know, he's been okay. Kyler Edwards at 6.7, Holyfield 5.7, Moretti down to 5.6. There's just nobody that excites me here. Aaron Shannon is questionable to play. If he's out, you know, obviously there's a few more shots for Edwards, a little bit more opportunity for, you know, Ramsey and Moretti to get some extra stuff, but nobody really excites me for the Texas Tech side of things. Kansas State, you know, same type of thing. Xavier Sneed is 7.6, Diarra 7.4. You know, I'm not really attacking this game. Both those guys are capable. If I want to use anybody from this, I would probably look down in the Kansas State side of things. You know, McGurl at 4'6 has been a guy. DeJuan Gordon at 4'2 is a guy who's a really bright future. I think we're going to be using him a lot next year. Montavious Murphy is you know, he's the last three games played 24 minutes, 31 and 24. He's down at 3'8". Opportunity for him to get, you know, a decent run, decent rebounds in an uglier game. He could pay off that 3-8. So I think 3-8 is a pretty decent price for him. And he would be the one guy I think I would be looking at for this game. How are you attacking this one?
At the higher level, like, I think Chris Clark is a totally fine cash play. You know, even at 7,500, I really think he's probably a pretty – safe play for 25-plus fantasy points, especially if Shannon misses the game, because Clark will slide, you know, into the starting lineup again. I don't mind T.J. Holyfield just because Kansas State doesn't really have a big guy down low to get him into foul trouble, and that's been one of his issues. But I'm with you. Montavious Murphy is somebody that I'm thinking about using a lot of. And then if Shannon does miss going down to 3,300 for Avery Benson, who shot up and I think saw 20 minutes in the last game with Shannon sitting out. is somebody that I will be using if I can find word, you know, throughout the day. Because, this game isn't one that last minute, if I find out Shannon's out, I want to scramble and edit, you know, 20 lineups or 25 lineups or whatever I end up with, just because I don't think it moves the needle enough at that point for me to worry about it. But if I can find out early enough in the day, and I believe the last report I read was that he still hadn't moved much at all. So I'm starting to wonder if he just doesn't miss this game as well. So Avery Benson is definitely on my radar as a value play at the 3,300 price point.
Yeah, you know, he a few weeks ago when actually it was like a month or two ago when Ramsey missed a few games, he came off the bench. I think it was against, I want to say DePaul or Louisville or something like that, and he had a click on it here. I'm just find out. In 22 minutes and 23 minutes, 21 fantasy points and 12 fantasy points. So he certainly has, you know, pop at the 3-3 score. Looking at him, he's one of those hustle guys, you know, when he's playing on the floor and you know, he does good things, he just can't crack the rotation when they have a full squad. So it's very risky to use him. But like you said, if you get the Shannon word early enough, I don't mind using him in quite a few of my you know, throwdown lineups. I don't think that I would personally, even with Shannon being out, brave enough to run him in the 250 or anything like that, because he is capable of getting just 7 minutes, but you know, with the Shannon news, and you're going to tell me that he plays 20 minutes, I think he could probably pay off 3-3 pretty easily there, just based off of rebounds, steals, blocks, that kind of thing. all right, but Murphy, yeah, I'm definitely going to have I'm feeling like a lot of him. With Clark being a cash play at 7-5, is he, you know, is anyone on the Kansas State side in that price range that you think would be a good tourney play or somebody that, you know, might be sneaky?
To kind of look at what I started for notes. I mean, I think Kadir Jara would be kind of the under-the-radar guy that could kind of return up maybe a 32 to 33 fantasy point performance and at what should be extreme lower ownership, you know, just because this really isn't a game people should be running to target at all.
No, totally. All right, next game here, this is one that I personally am favoring, and I'm going to assume a lot of people will. DePaul versus Villanova. KenPom has a 74-66 in favor of Villanova. They're 272nd in pace. So DePaul is coming in at 69th. Villanova is, you know, generally in the years past been a team we didn't like to necessarily target a bunch because of their elite defense. But they're not, you know, they're not locking people down like before, and they're giving up some good fantasy scores. So Paul Reed is somebody who I think would be a very safe, even on the road, pay up. I know 8-9 is quite a bit, but because of the fact that the DK pricing doesn't really price guys up above like 9-2 anymore, it's a lot different than the old days. Like last year, he probably would be priced at 10K at this point, but at 8-9, he's not really, you know, priced out per se. So I definitely like him. And he's going to be one guy that I like. I think that Darius Hall at 4-4 is a good play. And then I got here. Can you take over this game for me for a second?
Yeah, no problem. Yes, my look kind of on this game is I definitely love the game. And I kind of had to limit my personal notes for on site just because I didn't want it to sound like I'm just going all in on this game. But like, I'm big on Reed. I think Moore is a great GPP play. I always use Sadiq Bey. Colin Gillespie, to me, is a really solid play. Jermaine Samuels is another one of those cash-type plays, similar to Chris Clark. And then a guy like Jalen Coleman-Lands or even Cole Swider in this game could be used as really strong GPP plays for, you know, a cheaper price tag as a way to get exposure. So this is going to be the game I'm targeting a lot, or I'm starting a lot of my builds around. But I haven't quite started construction yet, just to see how things come together. But I'm going to have a hard time making a lineup without probably two players from this game. Now I know, like, Sadiq Bey kind of went off the last game, which is kind of scary just because he had been pretty basic the last few games before that. But he's somebody that I just think has a ton of upside. Obviously, he's not going to go 8-for-10 from three again. I'm not really interested in Robinson Earl just because I really like Paul Reed a ton. So I'm just going to stay away from him. He's somebody that I think should have seen his price come down a bit more than it has. You know, he's up in the mid-8Ks at some point, but he's just had kind of fallen off. He's been all right the last two games, but he's just somebody that I, at that price point, I'm never really going to roster. Romeo Weems is another is a super talented freshman, but, you know, it's tough for him to get any shots up when he has, you know, Charlie Moore taking a ton and Paul Reed, and even Coleman Lance putting up some shots as well. So probably somebody I'm not going to use at all, but he does have some talent and, you know, has a decent price to where earlier in the season I think he had the ability to go 6X at this price. You back now?
Yeah, thank you. So we're only kind of circling back around. Now, Darius Hall, I was mentioning how I liked it, 4-4. He's somebody who, you know, he's going to need around 20, 25 minutes, which I think he should get. Romeo Weems seems to get himself in foul trouble quite a bit. Hall seems like a guy who's going to be really nice next year and going to be like a regular starter and mid-range play that we're going to use. Look at his defensive rebounding rate is 17%, right around 10% for his offensive rebounding rate. So somebody who I like, I think Villanova, like I said, is very targetable. Maybe at home not as much, but I certainly want as much of this game as I can possibly handle, especially in the GPPs. Hall and Reed are definitely guys I'm looking at. Moore is fine at 8-4. He's got a really high assist rate. I think he's fine. Sadiq Bey is somebody who I never get right. I heard you kind of mention him. He's probably not going to shoot so hot this next game, but he's one of those guys who, like Jaws, you feel like it's safe to go back in the water with him, and all of a sudden he'll post like an 18. So it's really hard to use him. On FanDuel, he's been really cheap. Let's pull that up real quick. It's only 6'3 on FanDuel, and Jermaine Samuel's 5'6. So I'm personally just going to keep rolling those guys out there on FanDuel. I've been using, you know, Samuels a lot, especially on DraftKings under 6K. I'll probably have to think about it a little bit more now that he's actually 6K. But, you know, he's somebody who's continually putting up the 20 to 25 fantasy points. So I like him. I like Bay. What about Justin Moore? His price has gone up to 5'2", which is, I think he's been hovering around that price range. And he sometimes has 30 in his bag, and then other times he has 15. And he's not starting. I think it's just kind of like simple game flow with him. If the shots are falling, he's good. And if they're not, he's just kind of a bust, or what's the deal? Because he's a freshman, so just super inconsistent right now, right?
Yeah, he went through that stretch where he just was kind of on fire. You know, even coming off the bench against, like, LaSalle and going for 41. He's kind of cold right now, so a shooter coming off the bench going through a cold streak, I don't feel the greatest about going there. So I probably won't. I'd actually be more interested in Coleman Lambs at that same price in the game, to be honest.
Yeah, and he's a pretty consistent shooter. So this is certainly, you know, I think on a normal slate where you'd have, you know, maybe we had that LSU game or we had a couple fast-paced games or Creighton was on the slate, I think this game would probably fall somewhere in between the middle where you want a little exposure but you're not going to go overboard. And now that it's this type of slate where there's uglier games, this one almost appears to be, you know, the faster pace, more attractive, you know, fantasy-friendly team. So I'm probably going to end up with more of this than maybe I would normally, just like when you look at the next game here, Maryland versus Wisconsin. So this is a game I don't know that I want a ton of. KenPom has a 62-61 for Wisconsin, 350th in tempo, Maryland 153rd. By now, everybody knows Maryland is just you know, the Jekyll and Hyde of DFS. They're slow starters. Anthony Cowan is, I don't want to swear off a player. I try not to do that if I can, but I just see no reason to use Anthony Cowan anymore. His price never goes down, you know, below 7.7, 7.6, and he hovers at that price, and he's just capable of putting up 20, 15 fantasy points earlier this year. Normally you can count on the 30 from him, but he has no ceiling whatsoever. I hate him in this matchup. It's probably one that he will hit 30-plus just because I say that. But I'm close to swearing off Cowan. I'm not swearing off Jalen Smith, but his price is 8K. He's come down from 8.5 now, which is closer. But I can't imagine using any of those guys at those prices in this matchup against Wisconsin. Wiggins just showed his mega floor of 2 last game. There's really no one here on Maryland I like, except maybe Dante Scott, who I may be late to the party on this. Price is still only 4.3. He's at 18, 16, 13, and 18.25. So he's been hitting his salary figure, his value marker at this price. Wisconsin's a pretty poor matchup. Typically, this guy doesn't get into foul trouble, though, and he's been taking more shots. You look at the Iowa game, he took 7 shots, 4 of which were threes, and he's been hitting right around 5 to 7 shots per game, attempted, I should say. So a 4-3, I don't mind Dante Scott. He's probably the preferred play for me from Maryland. And then for Wisconsin, you know, I don't find myself using them very often. I had tournament exposure last slate to Michael Potter because I had been waiting for an explosion. I just didn't think it was going to come against Penn State, and I didn't think he was going to follow up his Illinois game with a 44. Price has jumped to 5.7 from 4.1. I thought the algo would probably put him at 4.5, and he'd end up being, you know, on 100% of lineups pretty much. But at 5.7, what are you doing with Michael Potter, and what do you think the general, you know, public of DFS will do with him as well?
I don't know that I can play him at 5.7. I mean, I probably will just because I'm going to have a decently large amount of lineups in that throwdown. But I just – he's going to have to continue to be super efficient, right? Like, the last two games have been ridiculously efficient when he's on the floor. You know, Illinois going for 32 when he took just 6 shots from the floor. And, you know – you have to remember, like, some of this is coming at the, you know, the expense of Nate Reavers, who, you know, coming into the year was supposed to be the Badgers' best player, right? So, I don't – that huge price jump just – I don't know that I can do it. People are going to do it, right? Because there are, you know, the box score chasers, and they're going to see those last two games and just automatically think that even at 5.7 it's – a steal to get him. I mean, to me, it might be a spot where I just go to Reavers. If I think that Potter's going to carry some ownership, just go with Reavers and hope that things normalize between those two. Because Reavers just, you know, hasn't been all that great the last few games. So, you know, I expect some sort of a bounce back at some point. And now that he's under 7K, like that seems attractive to me. And he's, you know, playing at home, which has made a huge difference for him so far this season as well.
Yeah, you know, Nate Reavers doesn't get talked about really at all. And I think coming into the season, people kind of took for granted how good Ethan Happ really was, and it was just assumed by some that, you know, Reavers was never going to have the production of Happ, but, you know, come in and take that alpha role, be a, you know, a 25 to 35 fantasy point guy, more on the 30 end of things. I mean, he does average 26 DK points, but, you know, he's kind of been a disappointment. You see that game against Penn State, I know he's in foul trouble, but once Potter came in and started going off, Reavers wasn't needed, and he sat on the bench. And I think his confidence level might be affected by Potter coming back and you know, getting eligible and having these, said, 3 really good games this year already. And I don't want to, you know, say that for sure, but you can kind of tell, and, you know, been around the game long enough for sports to know that guy's confidence is a real thing, you know, and that could be very well the case. He certainly has 35 in his bag or more, and I guess he's probably going to be, what, 5% tomorrow, maybe 8, something like that. So if he does have one of his 35 to 40 fantasy point games at 6.9 in that ownership, you'll be, you know, heading straight to the top of leaderboard. So I definitely like the Reavers call. What about, like, Kobe King, Brad Davison, Trice, like, all these guys who have – they have these wide range of outcomes from 30 to 4. You know, what's the game flow have to be like for those guys to succeed, or is it just kind of random?
So for Wisconsin, I don't think it necessarily needs like some sort of game flow, right? Like they just need to kind of run their offense through. Like Kobe King has done it a couple times this year where he's been really aggressive on offense. You know, that Illinois game where they stopped going to him down the stretch and then they ended up letting Illinois back in the game. You know, where the coaches even came out after saying that, you know, they should have kept going through him. He's had, you know, stretches where he just kind of dominates the ball, or, you know, he's the one guy in offense that calls for the ball or wants it, you know, like you're just talking about Reavers and not necessarily stepping up to be the kind of like that alpha leader that Hap was. Kobe King's kind of doing that at times. Like Trice has kind of disappeared the last couple games. Davison, I don't know, like he's just not shooting it very well, but he can get there on other things, but I just don't like the price point. So I'm probably just going to use Kobe King and just hope that he stays aggressive in this spot, you know, being at home. I think he makes an excellent GPP option.
Yeah, I just, man, Wisconsin's just tough. I haven't been able to figure them out. This is just, and Maryland's the same, and this is just a game of gruesome. Like, I can feel my tilt now, and I'm going to be looking at the leaderboards, and probably the person leading is going to have more exposure to that game than they really should. So it'll be quite interesting. Next game here, Kansas versus Oklahoma. KenPom has it 73-66 for Kansas. 203rd in tempo, Oklahoma 60th. I think down the stretch here, we're going to see Oklahoma, who started out the season really good. You know, they're 11-4 now. They were beaten up on, you know, they had a good win over Oregon State, a good win over Minnesota. I think both those wins are going to carry over and look nice. The Missouri win. But they lost to Stanford. They lost to Creighton, Wichita State. They're coming off the loss where they got kind of pummeled by Iowa State. And I think that what I'm getting at here is they're going to be a team that is more fantasy friendly than they had been earlier this year in terms of targeting against. I know Devin Dotson is going to play. They've already announced he has the hip pointer. At 8-1, that's a bit risky to take him. I think at full health, he'd be a really nice tournament play because people tend to fade him at that price. He kind of tends to be under the other options, and he's been pretty consistent hitting 30, and he has 40 in his bag. But I have trouble maybe using him at that price coming off the hip pointer. I do think that this is a time to look at Udoka Azubuike. I haven't really used him much at all this year. He is 7'6". It's a cheap price. Wouldn't use him in cash. But I think he's got the tournament winning upside today against Oklahoma. I really do. I think Oklahoma's going to be very targetable at all positions going forward. Marcus Garrett, the curious case of Marcus Garrett, he's really injury prone this year. He's only 5'5". He always ends up being that mid-range second to last guy out. You know, of your lineup where you're like, you know, I'm very comfortable using him, and he's done well. You know, it's just unfortunate that he's been, you know, hit with the injury bug, I think, 3 separate times this year, but he seems to be healthy now. He played 34 minutes against Baylor. He got 11-4-4. Didn't have any steals that game. The problem with him, and he has a major steal outside, which is nice, but the problem is he fouls a ton because he's super aggressive. He does get a lot of steals, but he also reaches a lot. He takes a lot of gambles. And because of that, he's just foul prone. So, you know, 3 of his last 4 games, he's had four fouls. And if you look through his logs, he's had 4 fouls quite a bit. And it's not just, if you go through the game log, it's not just, oh, they're fouling at the end of the game or whatever. He's actually hitting 2 fouls in the first half at times just because he's so aggressive. So I do have my reservations about him on the road. But he's a guy that is relatively safe normally. So out of all the Kansas plays, you know, Garrett has price points is nice. I think Azubuike's a tourney play, and Agbaji has actually been super, like, ham on the road. And it's matchups that you wouldn't think. So I think O'Shea Agbaji makes a really nice tournament play as well. No one's really going to roster him, and he's actually done really, really well on the road this year. And he's capable. You'll tell with him early if he's going to have a game, because he'll be really engaged. He'll hit back-to-back threes. He'll get a steal and a dunk, a couple assists. He gets fired up. You can really tell if he's going to be on his way to one of his 40s. Or if he's kind of just lackadaisically hanging in the corner, not aggressive on defense, you'll know it really fast with him. I haven't been using McCormick. I'm still not believing in Isaiah Moss. I know he can get hot and hit threes, but I don't think he's really a play ever. I tried the Christian Brown experiment last slate with him because he had been getting nice minutes. Usage is non-existent, and he stands in the corner too much, and he's not a play, unfortunately. 3-9, you know, with 20 plus minutes, you would think would be on your radar, but unfortunately he's not there yet. I don't know if he ever will. For Oklahoma, you know, Kansas has been beatable down low as well. You got to look at Christian Doolittle at 8-2. He's pretty safe, you know, cat all format play, really. So got to love him. The rest of Oklahoma, I've never really been a big fan of Reese. I know he has it in him, but he's always priced up too high for me. Brady Manick, I'm not paying 7-2-4. Bieniemy at 4-9, if you told me a year ago, I think I'd be thinking I'd roster him every slate. Harmon, the freshman, is just not good. They've inserted Alondis Williams into the starting lineup at 3-9. He hasn't been good. Oklahoma just doesn't excite me, you know, outside of Doolittle. So what do you just, you know, this is another game I think we can target and feel good about compared to the other ones, but none of the plays excite me really. So what are you doing with this one?
So to me, this one's going to kind of more be individual matchup based, rather than just the overall game itself. So like, I like the Austin Reeves versus Agbaji matchup. I like him for both. I like Reeves at home. He's been a lot stronger at home so far this season. He's averaging over 32 fantasy points playing at home. Then I like Garrett just because matchup-wise, he's going to kind of be on Bieniemy, depending on what Harmon and Bieniemy and Williams are doing. But Those three guys in the backcourt don't exactly draw a ton of fouls, so I think Garrett's going to be a little safer from a foul standpoint. And then I'm just trying to decide what Kansas is going to do at the power forward position to deal with Doolittle as far as from a defensive thing, just to see who's going to get the more minutes. You know, if they stay big, because we know that Doolittle and Manick are just going to be out on the floor. It's not like Oklahoma decides to go small, because those are arguably probably the best two players on the team, right? So Kansas is going to have to react to that. And, like, I know Christian Braun has played some four recently, but he's just not big enough, you know, strong enough to deal with Doolittle. So I almost think McCormick's got to see some extra minutes. You know, he's athletic. He's bigger, but he's still somewhat athletic. So McCormick kind of catches my eye as a GPP dart option, which is probably going to backfire on me, but I just, you know, I just don't think that they can get away with using Christian Braun or Enyaruna at the four up against Doolittle or Agbaji, who gives up, you know, would give up 30 pounds and, you know, 3 or 4 inches or whatever it is. So I don't know, like, Bill Self is tough to figure out on how he's going to run, you know, his rotations, especially at that four spot. It's just, it's kind of a revolving door. But if you can figure that out, I think you can find a GPP spot, you know, if it's McCormick or if it's Braun or Enyaruna, getting some extra minutes. I want to use Dotson, you know, like if his hit pointer's said to be good enough that he's going to be playing, like he's just somebody that I think is just ultra safe. And, you know, he doesn't have to, I guess in this matchup is kind of ideal because he doesn't kind of have to overdo it on the defensive end, because Kansas really shouldn't be afraid of, you know, that three-headed guard rotation as far as for handling the ball. You know, where in other spots, you know, spots he's facing, you know, Halliburton or somebody like that, who's handling the ball a lot and is a lot more dangerous. So I don't know. I'll have to read more about the hit pointer and, you know, kind of see what he's kind of gone through the last few days just to see. But as of right now, I think he's still going to be my favorite Kansas play. But I do think Baji probably makes a ton of sense for GPPs.
Yeah, and it seems like whenever we do shows, it tends to be a Kansas slate, and it's one where you're on McCormick, who I actually think is a good play this time too. But that seems to be one of your top recommendations every show that we do. It's kind of funny how that works out. And you've been pretty good about predicting when they're going to go big or, you know, play him additional minutes because they tend to match up for whatever dumb reason. They match up with the other team instead of just using their size, you know, to beat teams. So he actually will have to be on the floor, though, because Oklahoma's so big. So that's a good,
right.
good point out. All right. Two games left on the slate here. TCU versus West Virginia. Excuse me. KenPom has it at 67-58. Favor West Virginia. They're 66 in tempo. TCU is 267. You know, one guy for TCU that's been really quite a revelation this year is Kevin Samuel. He's coming off a pretty bad game against Oklahoma State at home, but look back on the road against Kansas State, 38. Iowa State was easy, 43. George Mason, 30. Xavier, 36. He's just been really, really safe. And somebody that I really like for tournaments because I think people have tended to be ignoring him or, you know, just not really noticing what he's doing. He's kind of quietly putting together these huge numbers. So I think he's going to be on quite a few of my tournament teams tomorrow in the throwdown just for that reason alone. You look at his efficiency rankings, 23% defensive rebounding rate, 13% offensive rebounding rate, and then a block rate of 12% and a 3% steal rate. So he's been a block machine, that's for damn sure. So I really like him. No one else on TCU really excites me. Desmond Bain, I know, is really good. Nembhard and Dennis Fuller and Gray are all kind of, you know, Nembhard's obviously the top dog of that group, but the rest is kind of split up minutes. Farabello at 4-3 is a guy who's been getting more minutes recently and somebody who is interesting to me at least. And then keep waiting for Jadon Lede to get his minutes up, but I guess we'll have to wait for next year on that. That's your boy. What are you feeling like with TCU? Because I feel like there might be some plays here, especially at the guard position.
I'm going to have to try to figure out what they're doing with their guard rotation-wise just to see. Farabello kind of stands out to me if he's gonna see 30 minutes in this game. I really have to consider him just because they need somebody else to score too, right? Like, because Samuel's not like the stud offensive player that they can just feed in the post and let him go to work. Desmond Bain's gonna put up a lot of shots, and I always like him GPP wise. But the one thing that I noticed, you know, kind of digging in is like, Samuel, like, he doesn't get himself into foul trouble, and arguably one of the toughest matchups, or matchups similar to what he's facing here, right, in terms of big men opponents against USC back in early December. He went for basically 40 DK points going up against Okongwu and Rack. So, like, that tells me he kind of has some experience coming into this game, you know, where he's going to have to deal with Culver and Shibway, right? So, I'm really big on Samuel, just like you are, even though he definitely destroyed some really strong teams in that Oklahoma State game, just because I thought he was just going to dominate on the interior the way that Oklahoma State's kind of folded up recently. For me, it's paying at the top with Payne and Samuel and then maybe Farabello. If I dig in more, and Farabello might just stand out, especially because he's at that price point of all those guys we talked about earlier as possible values, where we're trying to, you know, Goldwire trying to figure out how many minutes he's going to see or whatever. Whereas Farabello, if we can lock him in for 30, I might just eat that 4-3 and just hope that he gets 15 to 16 and with upside to 25 maybe.
Yeah, and that's I've been kind of looking at it on and off throughout the day when I can, and it seems like his minutes will be there, and we don't have enough road games to go off of. They've only really played two, so we can't say, oh, well, he's always bad on the road because we just don't have enough samples. I do know the only road games he's played he's been bad in, but, you know, we just don't have enough to go off of. I think he's a much better play confidence-wise for me over a Goldwire, like you mentioned, and I've kind of been going back and forth with it about, you know, do I really want to run, you know, Farabello and Octavius Mervy as my, you know, my two values, which they look decent, but it has the worry for me that both are going to put up combined under 10 and just ruin everything, so I'm, you know, cautious with it, but I think he might be, you know, he's clearly overtaking Dennis. Fuller had a little bit of run there, PJ Fuller, where he was getting, you know, 22 and 21 and, you know, 25 minutes, but he really can't count on him either. So I think Farabello and Samuel are both the two potential main plays, and I think you might want to get an RJ Nemhart share in there because 7K seems like a really bad price for him, and he has a tendency to disappear, but he can also get irrationally confident with his shot and can definitely win you a GPP if that's what's going on. For West Virginia, it's another team that's just, you know, you got Oscar Tshiebwe, who's really a consistent rebounder. He's starting to figure things out in terms of, you know, not fouling a ton. The offensive game is relatively limited in terms of they're not going to feed him in the paint. And like you mentioned on Samuel, let him go to work. He's going to get putbacks. Culver's more of the finesse jump shooter, can have touch around the basket. But it's, and he's had a couple good games recently, but it seems like Culver's been the one to struggle out of the two with foul issues, at least recently. The game against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, he looked really good in those 30 and 21 fantasy points. And he's been hitting right around that 20, but at 7-4, it's really hard to justify that price when he hasn't been hitting, you know, higher than 4X at that price really much at all. Jermaine Haley is a guy I thought we was going to end up using a lot this year. I haven't. Miles McBride really excites me for his future prospects. He's not quite a main team play yet, although he's close. 5-5 is interesting. I think it's a very good tournament play. You know, he's had games of 30 fantasy points. He's had games of 16, 11, but he hasn't had any really since he's gotten into the rotation where he's been, you know, in single digits or anything like that. So I think at 5-5 against TCU, he's a play that is probably going to be on people's radar maybe a little bit and start taking note about what he's been doing. You know, he's got a fairly high shot rate, right around 24%, which is second on the team only to Brandon Knapper in limited minutes. You know, he has a 21% assist rate, 3.5% block rate, 3% steal rate. Johnny would love this. He's a 77% free throw shooter, and he's shooting 41% on the year from long range with 34 attempts. So he's a really good and efficient player, somebody that I'm talking myself into more as I talk about it. So definitely like him, probably the best out of West Virginia. I'm super done with Emmett Matthews. I keep trying to throw him out in tournaments, and you know, because I remember last year he had some big games, and he's had that game earlier against a weaker opponents, 33, and against Rhode Island, 24. But he's just not, I don't know what, he's on team regression apparently, so he's really hard to play because at 4-4 last year, I would have thought, damn, this guy's 4-4 all the time, I'm going to be rocking him a lot, but he's just not doing it for us. He's really struggling. He doesn't have a good shot rate, and his rates all across the board are just really quite bad. If you want to take a tournament shot with Gabe Osabuhan, he's been somebody who's really, you know, he's had the two games wedged in there against Oklahoma State and Kansas where he was non-existent in foul trouble, but he's really been good at squeaking out the 15 to 17 fantasy points. If you look at his total log, he only averages 12, but since conference play started, and just before, he's been hitting right around 15 to 16 fantasy points. So at 4-2, I think for tournaments, if you're looking for, you know, a lower own value or somebody you want to rotate, you know, values around with and get exposure to, I think he's in that projective range where this slate might end up being won by who nails their value. You know, because he could have a game where if he just stays out of foul trouble and hits 20, that could be huge for you. You know, so that's somebody I'm certainly, you know, potentially considering. Weird to see Jordan McCabe down there at 3-7 and not be a play at all. You know, last year he had the 50 burger, or 60, I think it was, when he was like 4K, some crazy number, and he hasn't panned out. I actually think he's probably, you know, I'm surprised he hasn't already transferred, but he hasn't. What do you think about West Virginia? Is there another team that's really inconsistent?
I mean, I hate trying to figure them out. You know, like last game, they played 12 guys. The game before that, they played 12 guys. You know, where 10 guys saw double-digit minutes in each of those games. Like, we just can't figure out what they're doing. You know, like Knapper, who was playing next to, you know, just a handful of minutes, a lot of games, all of a sudden the last two, he's combined for 39 minutes. And he's put up 34 fantasy points in those 39 minutes. You know, but we could use him as a GPP dart play, and then all of a sudden he plays 8 minutes, and then, you know, like Sean McNeil plays some extra minutes, or Harler plays extra minutes. Like, it's just really tough to pinpoint how to use it. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of affecting Haley, Matthews, and McCabe is there's just no consistency to their minutes, right? Like they can't get into the games and perform. You know, those are guys that might not just come out onto the floor just hot and knock things down. Those are guys that kind of get into the game flow, get going up and down, you know, pick up a steal or something here or there, play with energy. But when, you know, their minutes are all over the map and they only play, you know, 3 minutes at a time or something, it's really tough. So, you know, I'll just probably use a share of Culver and a share of Shibuya, especially since they're basically the same price. So, you know, I don't have to try to pick which one's going to have a game. You know, I can just play a lineup and then swap, you know, them out for each other. And hopefully I hit that right. I just wish he did a little extra. I guess I have to consider Napper as a GPP dart play just because it's all of a sudden increased. But I just know that now that I'm going to consider him, he's going to play 6 minutes tomorrow.
Yeah, and like I said, he has a 27% shot rate when he's out there. So when he does come out there, I think he knows he might only play 5 minutes, and he's just out there chucking, apparently. So that could potentially work, but yeah. This is yet another team that just there's no defined rotation role and a true hot hand situation. And whoever ends up getting, you know, this right among others is really going to end up in a good spot for that 5K tomorrow. The hammer game that DraftKings added, they just had to make people sweat on the East Coast to make them stay up late, I guess. But San Diego State versus Fresno State, nice little hammer game. KenPom has it 67-58 in favor of San Diego State. Fresno State's 337th in tempo ranking. SDSU is 300th, so two slow teams. And SDSU has the 16th most efficient defense in the country. But they've also given up some fantasy performances, so I don't want people to think that they're just some super juggernaut that you can ignore. Now, they've already played Fresno State once and won 61-52. Jared Heider off the bench played 37 minutes, and he had 23 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. So he was the guy that completely went off on them. You know, this is a different Fresno State team a little bit, too. They were playing Lawrence in the starting lineup. Robinson was just kind of pre-breakout. Anthony Holland was playing big minutes, but he, you know, not really figuring things out yet, and he's been a lot better lately. So a little bit different Fresno State team. I think they're still going to lose. You know, Malachi Finn had a decent game. It was kind of balanced for SDSU. They, you know, Malachi had 16 and 5. Matt Mitchell had 15 and 6. Wetzel had 5 and 9 with a couple steal. So nobody really jumped off the page. And I think that might end up being the case again. But I find myself really unhealthily obsessed with late hammer game exposure just because I find it when I don't have exposure, I end up losing whatever lead I have. On paper, this is a really good spot to use Malachi Flynn. He's rattled off 3 straight games of 35-plus fantasy points. He had that little, you know, it was the Fresno game where he only had 23, and he was quite high. And I think it was a late slate, if I remember correctly, after he was just coming off a 40 and a 38. He's really generally quite consistent otherwise, and I'm not afraid to go back to him here. Mensa, I believe, is going to be out again, or he's highly doubtful. So Matt Mitchell at 5-5 makes a lot of sense. KJ Fegan is the guy that I've really been trying to figure out at 4-5. You know, he's in that price point of potential, you know, plays where he should be doing a lot better. I see you. So at 4-5, I think he's another guy you can pencil in for tournaments. You see 3 of his last 4 games, he's at 30-plus minutes. He really showed his upside. At Santa Clara, he was a pretty big fantasy performer and quite consistent, actually. And he hasn't really, I think, gotten into his role just yet at SDSU. But that game against Boise, he shot 16 times, 5-7 from deep, and 30 fantasy points. The issue with him is that he really doesn't give you much in terms of rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals. So if he's not having a hot shooting night, he's probably not going to make value. But that 4-5 price point is really appealing because back when they last played Fresno and most of the season, he's been around 5K. I'm getting a really steep discount for a guy with a potential 30 fantasy point, you know, game in his bag. So I'm probably looking at him harder than I need to, but he's definitely in my player pool. For Fresno, I'm certainly taking note of Orlando Robinson, who's been really good. Nate Grimes is finally healthy now and playing. He played that last game against New Mexico. He came off the bench for 17 minutes and had 23 fantasy points. He's a guy that gets a ton of rebounds and just contributes right away. But I think Robinson has really kind of taken the bull by the horns there. And he had those couple games without Grimes and even before where he was starting to show upside. He kicked out the San Diego State game. He hasn't had a game since December 20th under 35 fantasy points. It's really appealing in that regard. Definitely somebody that I want exposure to. And I'm probably going to have a lot of tournament shares up. Looking at his efficiency rankings, 25% usage rate, 30% combined rebounding rate, and right around 3.5% block rate. Doesn't get himself into foul trouble too much, and he draws 5.5 fouls per 40. So maybe that puts me off of Matt Mitchell a little bit, because of the fact. Blackwell's looking doubtful again. I think Hyder, New Williams, and Holland are all, you know, in play for tourneys because all those guys have actually tremendous upside if they get hot. And then Jordan Campbell came back for the first time, I should say, this season. Played 29 minutes. I rolled him out in that slate, and I got a little bit lucky at 3K. Ended up playing 29 minutes, got exactly 4X. Now his price has jumped from 3K to 4.2. There was foul issues for New Williams last game where he sat 17 minutes in the first half. I think that had a lot to do with why Campbell played so many minutes right away. But he's definitely going to be a part of the rotation and somebody who, you know, I think was really rusty. He took a ton of shots. He was missing a lot of shots. He's going to have that kind of volume at 4-2. Eventually, the shots are going to fall. So he is somebody that I'm definitely considering for tournaments still, but I'm not going to run him on a main team or anything. I definitely like Holland. He's somebody I'm looking at. I don't know. I think Hyder may end up being maybe semi-popular as the 5-1 cheaper, you know, hammer play. He certainly, you know, as a freshman, he's kind of had his ups and downs, but he's certainly kind of, you know, recently gotten really consistent, and he's very confident. I was watching that New Mexico game, and he was taking it to the rack time and time and time again, confident like he'd been doing this for years. So I think that I would prefer him over New Williams, who's 800 cheaper than him. And I wouldn't mind paying up from the 4-2 from Holland or Campbell to get him in my lineups. But overall, I think this is actually a better game than it looks like on paper in terms of plays and exposures. How are you handling this one?
I kind of agree. I think it helps that the game's in Fresno, which probably keeps it more on a radar. You know, I'm kind of with you on pretty much everything. Like, Robinson is really, really, really strong. You know, and if Mensah's out again, like, that just kind of opens up the middle a little bit more. So I like what Robinson can do. Definitely going to have Flynn. You know, after that game against Fresno where he didn't really pay off or do all that well, he's gone for 35-plus in three straight. So definitely going to be on him. I'm a big fan of this Hyder. He kind of came out of nowhere to start the season. He's just one of those guys that's kind of instant offense. You know, when he's on the floor, he's just going to find a way to get the ball up on the rim, you know, and you just hope that he's making shots. Obviously, it's a tougher matchup defensive-wise, you know, because San Diego State is really strong. I think it's kind of a flip of a coin between Shackle and Fagan, to be honest. You know, Fagan kind of had the big game last game, but that's kind of different than what he had been, you know, as far as shot attempts had been putting up in previous games. So I do think some people kind of chased his last game, which means I probably end up off of him. And I think I'm going to use Holland quite a bit. Now, the more that I look at it, he might be the guy in that low 4K range that I end up going with over all those other guys that we kind of talked about. Just because I think his minutes are a little more predictable as long as Blackwell continues to be out. Where Campbell, we just don't know. You know, like you had pointed out that he got a ton of minutes because of Williams barely playing in the first half. So we just don't know what he's going to see for minutes. And obviously this is a tough defensive matchup, and he just struggled from the field in a slightly easier matchup. So, you know, for me, it's definitely going to be Holland. And I'm hoping I can end up on Flynn as far as for my late-game hammer exposure and Hyder as well.
Yeah, I'm looking heavily at running too. Like, the first thing I thought of was, yeah, I want to run Flynn. Like, I want to build my team around Flynn, and I want a Fresno State guard, or I want Orlando Robinson. I don't know if I'm going to end up with the luxury of having Robinson if I end up playing a Paul Reed or somebody up in that upper tier range. But there's definitely a case for going more balanced on this slate as well, just because of the top guys with Nora, Toppin, Bain, Jones, Carey. They're just not our normal, upper plays where you feel like you got to lock them in. So I want Flynn, definitely. And I think that Fresno plays a little bit better than what people think they're going to do. I think we need exposure. Even if you're not comfortable running them on your main team, if you're going to play, tournaments and run multiple teams, you want to cycle through the Hollins and the Hyders and Campbell, and New Williams. You want to have exposure to those guys because any one of them could get hot, or New Williams could get in foul trouble again, or one of the other guards because they are aggressive, and even Hollins gotten in foul trouble before. So I think they're all playable options that I like. All right, now the next thing we're going to talk about is FanDuel. Why don't you lead us off with LSU Texas A&M? Disappointed DK doesn't have this game because I think it's going to be a good one. What are you doing with this one on FanDuel?
Kind of thinking, I'm definitely going to be all over LSU here, even on the road. Their price points on FanDuel are extremely low. Where Skylar Mason is just 6,600 as the top price guy. Then you got Emmett Williams, Darius Days, Javonte Smart right around the 6K, and then Watford down at 5,400 is somebody that I think is going to be extremely popular, especially with the way that he's been playing. Then we have to use some Texas A&M as well, and I think it's Josh Nebo for tournament purposes. Just got extreme upside. And I guess Savion Flagg, I don't know. I can never roster him at the right time, so I just don't know what to do with him. We do know that he has GPP upside, but then we also know that he can just completely disappear. But I hadn't really dug into the Texas A&M side yet, just because I spent most of my time on DK. But I think this is a game that we need to target. It looks like Andre Gordon's been playing pretty well for Texas A&M. But there's just a tough team to figure out, right? Like, they're kind of a less talented version of like West Virginia, where they just have a bunch of different guys. And I guess any one of them could kind of pay off because they're all somewhat cheap. But I just don't know who it'll be outside of Nebo.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one because Flag at 5'7", we would have thought would be an auto play, and it's just so surprising to see him be so spotty and not the guy that I thought he was going to be this year, because he had the second half of the season for him last year, he was an 8K guy, popping 35s like every game. And he just hasn't been able to do that. And I do think this is a decent matchup to target him for tournaments. And you're right, Andre Gordon's been doing well. He had 20-plus fantasy points last game. He's down there at 4'8". I like Trenton Watford a lot. I'm a pretty big fanboy of him. He's 5'4 on FanDuel. I think I'm not sure to call him an auto play by any means, but I think he's a very strong play there. He does have a tendency, unfortunately, to sometimes have a strong first half, kind of like almost like he plays for Auburn, because he's a strong first half, and then the second half will just disappear. It's the Auburn forward specialty, and it drives me nuts, but I think he's starting to figure it out. In the last few games, he's been hitting that 25 to 30 mark a little more consistent than before. So I really like him. I really like Darius Days for tournaments. No one ever rosters him. He is at 5'9", which is probably a little bit high for him, but he got that 16-16 game the other day. Even before that, you could see so much better than he was last year, and he's just really consistent. His shot wasn't falling last game, and that hurt him. But he takes a ton of threes. He takes a lot of volume. So ordinarily, he can volume his way to value if the shot's falling. So I like Days. I like Wofford. Smart at 5'7 is kind of the ultimate GPP guy. I don't really like Emmett Williams as much nowadays. I know he's got the upside, but I think with Wofford's emergence, it's kind of pushed him aside a bit. and Skylar Mason's always playable and a nice safe floor. So I want all that exposure I can get, I think, there. I don't know how I'm going to attack FanDuel just yet or if I'm even going to have time to do a lot of FanDuel because of the throwdown. But I definitely like all those guys, and I wish that game was on DraftKings just because I would have a lot more shares. How about Virginia Tech and Wake Forest? Landers Nolly against Wake Forest is pretty close to a tournament lock. But how about the emergence of Tyrese Radford? You know, it seems like for a while there, you know, Nolly was going to just be the ultimate, you know, go-to guy and do everything. And then for a while, P.J. Horn had a nice game. And then for a while, Couture had a nice game. Cones kind of stepped up. You know, the various guys, Aline got hot for a while, and now he's disappeared. But Radford, I think, might be the number two, and it seems like he has a stranglehold on that. Only 5-6 on FanDuel. What do you think about the way he's playing against Wake Forest? That's a pretty good price for him, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a real nice price. You know, I do worry about, you know, freshmen going on the road, right? So that's one of the big things that I, you know, definitely worries me. But he has 10 palms, number one overall offensive rating in college basketball right now at a 142.4.
Wow.
He's 6 foot one, but yet he's shooting 72% from two, which is 10th best in the country. His combined rebounding rate is, what, 30.2%? I don't know. Like, if this is something that's sustainable,
a turnover rate,
you know,
his turnover rate's fourth best in the country, too.
Right.
Crazy,
yeah. I mean, a 6.1% turnover rate. You know, he's a top 100 in the country offensive rebounder as far as percentage. You know, coming from a 6'1, 205 pound guard. Those numbers are just insane. You know, he doesn't really shoot it from three. He's only taken eight of them. Doesn't shoot free throws all that well for a guard, you know, 69%. But, you know, he's taken the third most free throw attempts on the team. So I definitely have to consider him pretty strongly. I don't know. He's kind of the guy that's come out of nowhere, right? Like, we knew, like, Jalen Cohn had a lot of publicity coming in, and, you know, we remember him that first play of the year being over 8K on DK, thinking that he was just going to be some stud. And he came off the bench and barely did anything at all. You know, so I don't know. I think I'm going to have to use some Radford shares. You know, if he continues to step up like that, he's, you know, as the number two guy behind Nolly. Like, we know that Virginia Tech over the last few years have, you know, had an offense that's been able to, I guess, allow multiple guys to put up numbers, you know, with Alexander Walker and Blackshear, you know, even some shooters on the outside as well. So I'm just curious to see if this rebounding from a 6'1 guard keeps up, you know, especially as we get into the deep conference play, you know, if he's gonna wear down at all. Just because, you know, he's gonna have to battle with some big guys down low for Wake, you know, to grab some of these rebounds.
Yeah, and he's kind of been quietly doing this. You look at in the non-con, you know, he was popping, you know, 8 rebound games, 11 rebound games, and then he kind of went in a lull there, and he just wasn't really being talked about by anyone. Nobody was playing him, and all of a sudden it's just, you know, I might have been reckless, but I had 100% of him against NC State because I was just like, the guy, he was too cheap on DK. That slate was a little weird anyways, and I didn't expect that from him. But I was pleasantly surprised to see him, you know, get 30-plus fantasy points in 18-9, one-assist, two-block game. I really feel strongly that he's, you know, that second position behind Nolly, he's just kind of taking it. You know, no one wanted to grab it. BD was never going to be this 6'9", 7K player that was reliable. You know, he wasn't going to be that guy. P.J. Horn is just way too inconsistent. Couture is kind of a corner stander. I thought Naheem Aline was going to be that guy for a while, but he's now regressed back to, you know, he's a youngster also. Jalen Cohn, who DK apparently thought was going to be the guy. I remember they priced him up so high day one, and he's starting to come around a little bit. But, yeah, I think that Radford is just, you know, a very safe play. I definitely like him. Wake Forest, you know, Oliver Sutter was a guy that I've been using a lot. He's one of my favorite players for them. Lately, I haven't been taking him much. I don't really use Childress too much. I know Sean Day Brown is a game time decision. He'd missed the last two games, which made Andre and White and with Torrey Johnson plays. Neither one of those guys excite me at all. Is there anybody on Wake Forest that you feel like you want exposure to?
God, I think it's going to be Adrian White just because Virginia Tech is giving up a ton of threes. Like 46% of the field goal attempts against them are coming from three, which one is, you know, one of the bottom, 12 in the country, I think. And Adrian White, you know, it's kind of been their most aggressive three-point shooter outside of Childress, and Childress doesn't exactly shoot it all that well. You know, it does seem like a spot where Sarr could kind of bounce back to what he was doing earlier in the season. So he's somebody I'm going to have some exposure to, just because we know he basically has six x upside at this price point. You know, there was a stretch where he was basically locked in at, you know, 5.5 to 6x this price point. So I think he just makes a ton of sense. But aside from that, it sounds like Shonday Brown is going to be out again, which is why I really like Adrian White. But other than those two, I just not a big fan of this Wake Forest offense.
Yeah, no, they're not showing any improvement on Manning, and they I don't think they will. But I think they would like to get rid of him, but they're dialed into that expensive contract so that they can't. Last game on the FanDuel slate, Missouri versus Mississippi State. Tempom has a 66-63 for Mississippi State, 310th in Tempom, Missouri 278th. I'm really mad at myself that against Florida, you know, I didn't expect Missouri to drop 91, but I really liked Drew Smith that prior to that game. And it's been a trend of, you know, high volume, I want to call it a hybrid slasher. I don't have a better term for it. It's been really harming Florida a great deal. And I talked myself out of Drew Smith just because of his price, but I'm really upset I did because, of course, he crushed Florida. You know, their whole team did, but he had 22, 2, 6, and 5 steals. Now, obviously, the 5 steals really jumped his number up, but the 22 points, you know, and a lot of those were easy, you know, layups. They were just, you know, slashing to the basket, running up and down the court. It was a lot faster pace than I think people thought it was going to be, and that's just kind of the position or archetype that's been harming Florida. So I have to say that I'm mad I didn't trust myself there. I really like him yet again here in this matchup against Mississippi State. I think he matches up well against them, so I think he's certainly in play. They're at 6'7". It's kind of a you know, that price on FanDuel where, you know, you kind of stuff the studs and then you get those 5K guys and you end up with that one or two spots between 6'5 and 6'9", I've noticed. So he's right in that realm. So I definitely like him there. I like him better than a Robert Woodard or you know, somebody else in that range. Nick Weatherspoon at 6K is somebody who I still like. I've been plugging him in on DraftKings pretty much any time that he's under 6'2", which has been forever now. He was that min price, and then he went to 6 and then 6'2", I believe. He's just really good, high volume. He's you know, kind of pushed Tyson Carter aside. Carter had that nice start to the season, and he's really just fallen off. And at 5'1", you'd think that's a nice spot to grab him, and maybe it is for tournaments, but I can't advocate Tyson Carter right now with Weatherspoon back. Woodard still looked okay. Ato is playing out of his mind right now because of his putbacks. If Tillman ends up missing again, which, you know, he's really only going to end up fouling out of this one anyways, but Ato could probably have himself a really high rebounding game again tomorrow without Tillman on the floor. And then Reggie Perry is kind of priced a little high for me at 7'9". I've been using him a lot this year, and I like his game, but I watched their last game, and he is hanging his head a lot more than I would like to see from him. It seemed like with Mississippi State was making early mistakes, or, you know, he missed a three, he would hang his head on the way back, and he's been having kind of, you know, a few rough games here recently. So for me, I'm probably not using Perry against Missouri. I think I'd prefer to use Weatherspoon and then the Drew Smith side of things for Missouri. And then there's also, like, Javon Pickett, you know, Xavier Pinson, Torrance Swanson, you know, all these cheap Missouri guys who will randomly go off. I don't really tend to take them because I know I can't get them right. But I'm sure somebody out of that group will do well. And then a 5'2 Mark Smith from Missouri is also somebody who's really interesting to me. So the Smiths and Weatherspoon for me. How about you?
I'm probably going to be on Perry. I just, you know, he just draws a lot of fouls. And, you know, the interior for Missouri, even if Tillman plays, they just commit a lot of fouls. So I think it's a great spot for him on the interior. You know, I'm fine with Weatherspoon. I'm probably all right with Woodard, too. He kind of seems like he hasn't been affected a ton by Weatherspoon being back, the way that Carter has. And just kind of looking at him, he seems basically real safe for, you know, right around 4X. So I'm completely fine with him. You know, Adu could definitely get there. You know, like, he could pick up a ton of blocks in this game going up against, you know, like Pinson trying to drive to the rack or, you know, Pickett. You know, a couple of those guards that are trying to get into the lane, you know, his help defense, pick up some blocks. Missouri side, I'm kind of similar to you. Like, Drew Smith makes a ton of sense, but I just, like, that price point is in that odd area. I think I'd probably lean towards Mark Smith just because my sweet spot on FanDuel has been that low to mid 5K range. If you can nail that on some of these slates, like, you seem to do really well just by the way that the pricing breaks down, just because you're able to kind of get that extra stud compared to DK. So I think Mark Smith is going to end up being my play from Missouri. Any of those other guards can do it. And then, you know, Mitchell Smith or Reed Nico, if Tillman's out, like, each of those guys have shown over the last couple of games that they could, you know, randomly pay off. I just don't know which one, and then which one stays out of foul trouble. You know, if you pick the right one and that's the one that's on Adu, then, you know, because we know that Mississippi State's not going to run a ton of offense through Adu. So we might be able to avoid foul trouble on whoever is guarding him. You know, so, but generally I try to not target Missouri just because I've never really had a ton of success doing so.
Definitely. All right, so that wraps up the FanDuel slate, the DK slate. It's definitely an interesting – I like the FanDuel slate quite a bit. I will probably end up playing a little bit over there, but maybe not as much just because, you know, for me, it's going to take me longer to make so many throwdown lineups. I'll have to figure out an optimizer to use. What's your plan or strategy for the throwdown? Because you normally do a lot of MME stuff anyway, so this probably won't affect you quite as much, but I assume that you're going to have more entries than maybe you normally would. How do you – maybe people want to hear how you approach, you know, doing MME on a tournament like this that's so top-heavy.
So a lot of times I am going to pinpoint the few games on the slate that I like. You know, obviously some nights it's more than a few. Other nights it's just one or two. But I will make some game stack lineups, you know, where I basically go 3 to 5 players from that game and just trying to nail things. You know, so like that, obviously the DePaul Villanova game kind of stands out as one of those options. That Kansas-Oklahoma game kind of stands out to me a little bit. But it's just especially the spot. So, like, I really wish a team like Minnesota was on this slate because we know centralized where their offense is going to come from. So when I would be able to game stack it, I could just do different combinations around, like, Marcus Carr and Oturu. You know, so I definitely build a few game stacks, and then I just try to decide based on the slate. Like, if there's a lot of studs that I want, then, you know, I'll rotate them amongst the value that I think is best. And if there's not a ton of studs, you know, then I'm probably just going to rotate some of the value guys around more of a balanced build. you know, maybe paying up in one or two spots, but just trying to rotate guys to try to hit that pairing that ends up going off.
Yeah, that's a good sound strategy because I've kind of, you know, we both went through, a lot of regulars have kind of a sour streak, if you will, of you know, just a lot of busts that guys that normally wouldn't. And I think it kind of correlates, at least for me, can't speak for you or anyone else, trying to do the studs and scrubs thing too much. You know, trying to take a shot on a Christian Brown when I really shouldn't be doing that, where I should have went, you know, Quickly and Sutton over, you know, over Markell and Brown. That's what I think my 2v2 was. Looking back, you know, it's a horrible decision to go Markell and Brown. But, you know, we're just been doing that so much in the way DK pricing used to be that it kind of, you know, ingrained in me that I need to get in all these top studs. But with the way the pricing is now, maybe I don't, because, you know, there is, and it's not every slate. You can't say it for all the time, because some slates there is no mid-tier. But I'm definitely looking at, you know, a slate here where I'm not going to be trying to stuff in Paul Reed with, you know, Charlie Moore and Obi Toppin, or I'm not going to be trying to get Nora with Reed and Desmond Bain. I just, that doesn't seem like the build for me. You know, I'm going to go down a little bit and get Malachi Flynn and maybe one of those guys up there in 8K, and then I'm going to try to, you know, play a Farabello and one other value and then a bunch of mid-tier guys. That seems to be the build. I just, the last three slates prior to the night's showdown, which was awful, I've had some pretty good success again. I wanted to just kind of share that with everyone that, you know, I've been having a hard time kind of going back to the basics a little bit, relying more on that mid-tier range. Scott Saw, you guys know him, you know, he kind of said it best that it's really hard when you're trying to stuff in these extra studs, getting a 5X from them, because you really end up just praying for the 4, like, I got to get that 36 or I got to get that 40 just to make 4X. Whereas the 6K guys, maybe the 7K guys, you know, they're going to hit that 3.5x, 4x number mostly. And then they're going to have those games where they hit 35 to 45, and maybe you get lucky and hit the 50, and you're going to get that 5, 6x number from them. And they seem to hit that 5x number more often than the 8 or 9k guys. You know, even with Marcus Howard, who everybody loves to roster every slate, you know, he has those games where he hits 20. So it's just, it seems like a little safer range. I like the way he put that with the mid-tier. So that's kind of the way I'm going to look at it, and I'm personally going to try to find a core and just kind of wrap around it, and hopefully that core hits, and then, yeah, like you said, do some game stacks and stuff. Do you think the slate itself, because of the games that are on it, may be a little bit lower scoring than what we're accustomed to for a big tournament like this?
I mean, I want to say yes, but just, you know, from history and what we're used to, whenever these bigger tournaments come out, as far as bigger fields, you know, it still tends to find a way to be higher scoring. And kind of looking at it, I just kind of scrolled through the low 4K range just to look at names that we mentioned. Like, you know, as long as a couple of those guys hit, like, I still think this is going to be a somewhat decently high scoring slate. Now, if all those guys miss, you know, the 3,600 to 4,500 guys, and say that basically none of them, you know, return a 5X or higher kind of return, then, yeah, I could see it being, you know, the 235 to 245. You know, this field tournament, I still think, even if the games are kind of shit, I still think it's probably going to be a 260 type night. But that's, you know, it still means that the studs have to hit too, right? Like, you're still going to need a Paul Reed to go off, you know, or Trey Jones goes off, or Vernie Carey just destroys Clemson, you know, those kind of things. So, like, I mean, I'm kind of torn just because my personal build style is usually stars and scrubs. Like, I just try to find those random guys in the low, you know, low 4K range that have a chance to go 6X, and then I try to jam in multiple guys at the top just because I know what they're capable of, and I hope I hit those ceilings. You know, from what I've noticed on DK is I just really haven't liked the 6 to 7K price range this year. I don't know if it's just because I can't seem to pinpoint when those guys are going to go off, but a lot of times I just find myself ignoring it. You know, or the 6,500 to 7,500 price range. So maybe that's one of my issues lately, too, is with some of the tightening prices, you know, I've been missing out on guys that I shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I think we really have to rewire our brains because we're so used to, you know, even, you know, last year was still like before the ban, the way they priced things, and they, you know, guys were mispriced, and, you know, in the old days with the way the pricing was, somebody at 6'7", you know, oh, that's too high for them. But this year, maybe it's not too high for them because if they're any kind of good putting up 4X like Jaden McDaniels, they're just going to be 7'5 to 7'7", even coming off a 14 fantasy point game where in the past they would drop down, you know, to like 6'5 or less. It's just not happening anymore. So I think you're right. You know, you might have just talked it out and figured out where you maybe you were struggling because I'm sure you, like others and myself have done, you look at somebody like, I'll just use for example, let's say Tevin Mack at 6'5". You know, oh, that seems maybe a little high for a streaky shooter. In the past, you know, he'd be somewhere between, what, 5'4", 5'8". That'd be his spot. And maybe this year 6'5 is like that, you know, with the way things are priced. So yeah, I think we just have to kind of rewire and think to ourselves, you know, maybe that's not so bad. Like me, I'm looking at Trey McGowan's at 6'5", and he's going to be somebody who tilts me because I feel like I'm going to be strongly exposed to him quite a bit. And I think lately, it's really slightly dependent, obviously, but I think lately – maybe that's why it's changed for me, the mid-tier has looked a little bit better and there's been more options, you know, like Jermaine Samuels being 5'6", 5'7", or, you know, some of these other guys, there's been a lot of in that 5'2 to 6K range lately that have been nice. So, yeah, it's just obviously slate dependent, but I've definitely noticed that too. Cool. Well, I appreciate it, man. I think that about wraps it up. I know you got a ton of lineups to make, so take all night, save the rest to get building, and then the rest of tomorrow. Good luck, and hope to see you at the top of the leaderboards, my friend.
Yeah, good luck to you, and I'm sure you'll be up for the next few hours with me, so I'll probably be chatting with you on Twitter.
Oh, yes, I'll be up, man. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yep, no problem. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you for dealing with my background noise. Those of you that have kids, I'm sure you can appreciate it. Oh, yep. Here we go. Yeah. Oh. I appreciate everybody who sat through and, you know, were patient with me. Big slate tomorrow. I will be available on Twitter to answer questions, obviously, in our Slack chat as well. Best of luck to everyone. Good luck on getting that first seat and winning the throwdown. See you.
Yeah. DA got that dope.